coming up next. Minding Your Business with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
It seems like everyone is starting a business these days. Entrepreneurship is close to its all-time peak. On today's show, we're going to get into the driving forces behind entrepreneurship, from the type of person that can be successful starting their own business to creating the fertile environment required for entrepreneurial innovation.
Yeah! Now I'm in the blogosphere, now I'm in the Twitterverse. Fans get so immersed, but I'm a nerd forever. I'm the new Zuckerberg, and since my website, I've been cooking dough like a chef serving kilobytes. Used to be the basement, back at my mom's place, building web traffic so that we could sell an ad space. Make way for the one-man businesses, bailouts finish with...
It often seems like tech startups get all the attention, but there are many ways to start a business. We've had accidental entrepreneurs on the show, comic book and music enthusiasts who turn their obsessions into a business, and people who went from a consulting practice into a franchise. We're also going to talk about the things that drive those choices and the personality traits that determine the types of businesses people start. We have two experts with us today who come from nearly opposite sides of the spectrum. One comes from the world of franchising, the other from the tech startup ecosystem. They're going to walk us through what it takes to make right decisions when it comes to starting a business, no matter which road is traveled. Minding Your Business is about delivering the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. It's reality radio for entrepreneurs.
Right on the homepage. Hella Monk is Moto in a photo by the phone craze. And I'm up in Mashable. Weekend trip to New York. Bar pity, One Oak. Parties full of New Dorks. Now I'm pitching business plans from the backs of napkins. Micro lent to Africans. Monetize Kazakhstan. Catch me up on LinkedIn, dog. CEO. You can see where I be with the IPO. Now I'm up in skinny jeans.
My guests today are Jeff Levy and John Sechrest. Jeff is an entrepreneur, author, and coach who has helped hundreds of people open their own franchise or small business. Since moving to the Pacific Northwest in 1984, Jeff has been involved in the financial management and operations of many public and private companies. In 2002, Jeff opened the local office of the Entrepreneur Source, which provides business and franchise coaching. Jeff is also always serving the entrepreneurial community in one way or another, whether that's as an advisory board member at the Seattle University Albert School, teaching an MBA class, or speaking at career counseling centers. He offers up his experience and advice in the book he co-wrote recently with David Nielsen, Making the Jump into Small Business Ownership. He's so busy, we're lucky to have him here today. Welcome to Minding Your Business, Jeff.
Thank you, Robin. It's really a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to spending the hour with you and with John.
And so are we. We're also very happy that John Sechrest could join us today. John started as a software engineer at Hewlett-Packard, writing network code for calculators, and he's the founder of Peak Internet Services. As economic development director of Corvallis, Oregon, he founded the Willamette Angel Conference and participated in the Oregon Angel Fund. He recently brought that model of community investing to the Seattle Angel Conference, where the startup Illumigear received $100,000. John is also involved in the Lean Startup Seattle Group and the Linked Seattle Capital Entrepreneur Group. John, it's great that you could join us to discuss startup culture. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Thanks very much, Robin.
So, John, why are you so interested in entrepreneurship?
So I think that angels and entrepreneurs getting together create a certain kind of magic, and that magic drives a whole collection of results that are wonderful. The future economy is being created today by people starting new businesses. And the businesses of today that are successful are busy being successful of the economy today, not necessarily the economy of tomorrow. And so finding that magic and getting that to go allows us to adapt rapidly to the changing circumstances of the world.
How do you see the economy of tomorrow being different?
Well, we have some really big challenges, global warming, healthcare, all sorts of things that are completely unsustainable. And so the world is going to have to adapt and change. The only way that we're going to be able to do that is to adapt through innovation and through that innovation, creating business to make that go. So all of the goals that people have that want to make the world better, where you have large numbers of people changing their behavior, is exactly the place where a business should be creating value for that change in behavior.
So you think you can save the world through entrepreneurship too?
You can save the world through entrepreneurship. Actually, I think that's the only way it's going to actually happen.
I've been watching the documentary Collapse.
Yes.
Jared Diamond. Right. Much easier to watch than to read, I have to say, even though his first book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, was so amazing. But that's what he talks about throughout the book, how all these forces are colliding where we could be the next Rome.
Yeah, but there's still people living in Rome. It's not like the world ended at the end of that era. It's just that a bunch of people had to adapt to do things differently. And since we know that things are changing, we might as well build the muscles so we can survive that adaption requirement.
Corporations could be doing a lot more of this. Why do you think it's better in this kind of outlier setup?
So in the life cycle of a business, there's a growth phase where you're coming up into the market and you're exploring new things and adapting to that process, which is where you get the classic hockey stick in your revenue. And then you get to a point where you sort of level off, and that leveling off is a maintenance phase. And so all of the big companies have lots of products where they're doing a maintenance phase of the product, which is very profitable, but you need to defend and manage that. So managing that task versus building something that's disruptive and transformative are sort of opposite ends of the problem.
You
and
think they're mutually exclusive, that a company can't innovate while still selling existing products?
I think you have to, it's not true that a company can't innovate, but they have to separate those tasks and put them in different piles and put a locked door between them.
Well, that's what kind of Skunk Works were all about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back in the day, right?
Right. And if you read the book by Eric Ries, The Lean Startup, he basically makes a case that you need to be separating out the people that are doing the lean startup inside big companies as a way of allowing them to do that innovation and doing that discovery. And there are some examples of some big companies that are able to do that.
Like?
I'm forgetting it was Federal Express or UPS, one of those. I need to go
back
and read.
That's what he talks about in the book.
Yeah, it's a very interesting case study that he puts out in the book.
So what's the real difference between a lean startup and another type of startup?
And so the whole lean startup conversation is about typically have somebody who sees a problem, and then they have their hammer in their hand and they go solve that problem, and they're really attached to the hammer that's in their hand. And sometimes solving the problem isn't really the question. The question is there anybody who cares that you solve that problem, and will they pay you to solve that problem? And so lean startup methodology is a collection of activities that allow you to move customer development earlier than product development, so that you actually learn what people are willing to pay for, find out what really they consider a solution, and that helps you build the things that people need. That is, you spend less time wasting on product development on products that nobody will build or will buy, and you spend your time on the parts of the product that people really care about by doing the customer interviews and customer discovery.
So isn't that just like applying agile development to the business startup process, where you iterate over and over?
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole lean methodology comes out of Deming in the 50s, and it went through the lean manufacturing and Toyota, and then Agile about a decade or so ago started moving that methodology into software, and now the lean startup conversation is taking that set of principles and applying it to the question of how do I go from I have an idea to I have a reasonable business with reasonable revenue, and spending your time on the things that matter and not spending your time and money on things that don't matter.
Makes sense to me. I'm speaking with John Sechrest, recently of the Seattle Angel Conference. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. So tell me about that Angel Conference that you just held in May.
Yeah, so this was the first Angel Conference in Seattle. There are five of them in Oregon. The oldest one is about 11 years old. The Oregon Entrepreneur Network is the one that started this. And I just used that model and brought it up here. Specifically, we gathered a collection of investors who are SEC-qualified investors that allowed them to invest according to the current SEC rules. And they put together a fund of $100,000. We spent 10 weeks doing a due diligence process on 26 companies. We ended up with 6 finalists in a wide range of different industries. All of the finalists had some kind of champion in the investment group. So there's some angel engagement that was there, people who were interested in seeing that particular business do something interesting in that market. The 6 finalists presented, the angels consulted, they picked one, and Aluma Gear was the winner. They're focused on safety for construction and trying to provide 360 illumination for the person who's working at night on the highway and doesn't want to get hit by someone. So that was a very interesting one. It's interesting because it's not a typical tech startup where a guy does software. We had 2 software companies, Buddy Platform and Aptentive, that were really interesting software companies. We had Stockbox Grocers, that was grocery stores in a shipping container for food deserts. We thought that was a very interesting idea, trying to figure out some of the details of how they're going to make that work. We had Empower Me, which was working on how to help parents and kids get more focused on what they're trying to do, prepare for a career, prepare for college, do whatever the parents want you to do kind of thing.
So you had a wide variety, and it's interesting to me that they put all the $100,000 into one basket of Illumigear.
Right. The model, as we were running it, does pick a winner. And the goal of that is to give them enough to be successful at what they were doing. So all of those companies had people who were interested in seeing things happen with them. And this was the one where the group as a consensus could vote. And through that process of discussion and consensus making, a lot of the angel skill development went on as well. We had maybe 30, 40% of the people who had invested as angels before, and then the others were new investors who hadn't been investors before. So part of our goal was to create new angel investors who would participate in this process earlier.
We have about 30 seconds. Can you tell me the difference between a conference like this and maybe like the Lean Startup Conference or the other ones that you're involved in?
So the Lean Startup process is about trying to build lean skills for entrepreneurs, where the Seattle Angel Conference is about building angel skills for new angels.
My guests today are Jeff Levy of the Entrepreneur Source and John Sechrest of the Seattle Angel Conference. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Next up, we're going to introduce Jeff Levy to talk more about entrepreneurship and franchising and what else we can do to help businesses get their businesses off the ground, whether that's financing or marketing or social media or whatever it is. So we will be back with our guests, Jeff Levy of the Entrepreneur Source and John Sechrest, in a moment. Our show today is about starting a business, and we're speaking with startup experts John Sechrest and Jeff Levy. Jeff, what is it about entrepreneurship that you think is so great?
Sure. Well, the magnet attraction for me, Robin, is that since my early 30s and I'm in my early 60s, is I've made a career out of being involved in different kinds of businesses, startup businesses, management buyouts, leverage buyouts, but all entrepreneurial type of activities. And they've really been good to me, good to my family, and to the degree that I can share back with other people and help them learn the skills you need to be self-empowered, that's the real attraction for entrepreneurship for me.
I wanted to ask you about the types of people who choose to go the franchise route. But before I do, I wanted us to listen to an excerpt from an interview I did with Alan Regala, who left his own business to start a franchise.
So I had my own company for about 5 years doing my own products, as well as consulting for other folks, consumer product companies and medical device companies. And just decided that I wanted to do something a little bit different and wanted to do something that was beyond just myself. Really, it was just me. I mean, I was a one-man show for Everyday Innovations, outsourced everything. Marketing, I mean, a lot of it in terms of the manufacturing, the fulfillment. I did mostly, I had sales reps, but I was pretty much the company. And when you're running your own show, obviously there's a lot of time and effort involved, but it's also, gets kind of lonely.
You can get to meetings. You can make up meetings. You can have meetings with your wife.
That's true. And so, what I ended up doing was just deciding that I wanted to do something a little bigger scale that was more than just me. And there are things I want to learn as well, because there's certain things that I couldn't learn doing things on my own, such as like building a team, being a leader. I decided that I wanted to either go back to school, which my wife wasn't really a fan of, to get an MBA, or to start another business. The good days, you know, in my own business, I love it. You know, being my own boss and the flexibility of it, even though I work my butt off, which every business owner does, it's something that you just love. You know, once you go down that path, it is kind of hard to go back sometimes. But the thing I didn't like about it was really going solo again, right? So, and then the thought of having a partner really appealed to me. But I've heard, you know, stories from other folks and, you know, about partnerships not working out and things of that nature. And it just seemed kind of ridiculous to just kind of try to find a partner for a business that I, you know, haven't even thought of. So the concept of a franchise really appealed to me, because the franchisor, you know, is that partner, and they have obviously the systems in place. You're buying a system, essentially what you're doing, and they have all the pieces in place for you to be that partner. And so it's like you're still running your own business, but you have this support from the franchisor.
Jeff, have you had the same experience with people you've helped become franchisees?
Sure. Well, let me address your earlier question, too, in terms of the kind of people that are interested in franchises. And, you know, if we look at our economy today, we've got a lot of people that are unemployed, but yet they have resources and they have a lot of talents. And so if we look at the 45 to 60-year-old person that may have been caught in a layoff, these folks have a lot to contribute. They've got a lot of productive years. And but they oftentimes have not had any of the entrepreneurial training. They may have gotten an engineering degree or accounting degree or law degree or a liberal arts degree. And franchising, as your last taped interviewer was talking about, really creates a system and creates a group of a support network. And so it's a lot easier for a person to shift over into franchising than it is perhaps to come up with your own unique idea and take a business from infancy to maturity without that structure.
So what's the real difference in a personality trait between someone who has that original idea and somebody who has maybe some business background already?
You know, I think there's probably more similarities of people than differences. I think that when you have a unique idea, and that creates your passion, that is something that drives people to do all the difficult and challenging things to be in your own business. I find that the people that look at franchising, their passion is not necessarily the product or the service. Their passion is the control of their life, the control of their destiny, achieving certain work-life balance, plateaus and new vistas that they might not have been able to do working for somebody else. I think that's primarily the difference.
Alan worked with the broker to choose Shelf Genie as his franchise. Explain to me what a franchise broker can do.
Sure. We have a unique part of this franchise industry in that there's a significant imbalance. There's about 4,500 franchises nationally. There's about 2,000 in Washington State. But literally, there's millions of people that inquire about franchising. So we have what might be the equivalent of real estate brokers, but people that are trained and understand franchises. And so a franchise broker, if they do their job well, is more like a coach. They start off by listening to, what are you trying to accomplish? What are your financial goals? What are your work-life balance goals? Take a look at your net worth, discuss your credit history, and understand what your skills are. What are the things that you can leverage? So a franchise coach or franchise broker is someone that starts with the client needs and then helps sort through some of the clutter by maybe identifying a group of franchises or a category of franchises that someone should evaluate. And then, of course, by the time you evaluate, if you choose a business, there's a significant amount of details, legal reviews, setting up your corporation, financing, and a good coach will obviously support the client right through that stage up to signing their franchise agreement.
Is there a cost involved with bringing a broker on to help you in this process?
Generally, no. The franchisors realize that the broker community is a marketing expense for them because they don't have the infrastructure to deal with the amount of people that bring in inquiries. So typically, the franchisor will put aside part of the franchise fee and will compensate the coach based on a deal being signed. But the interesting thing is that that fee is never added on to the franchisee's costs. If the individual person found the franchise by themselves, they'd pay the same fee. So effectively, it's a no-cost service to the client.
We're speaking with Jeff Levy of the Entrepreneur Source. He's one of my guests today on Talking About Startup Businesses. And I'm Robin Block. You're listening to Minding Your Business. How does someone choose the right franchise for them?
Well, that's a process that, from my experience, and I've been involved now in helping nearly 160 people sign franchise agreements.
Oh, then we should have said almost 200.
I'm working on that. I've got some ways to go. But it's a process that takes time. And a typical effort between myself and a client is between 2 to 6 months before they either find a franchise that's the right fit or determine that a franchise is not the right fit for them. So it really starts off with an understanding of what their communication style is, discussion of what their interests are, what their skills are, working with some programs that help the person really evolve their vision for what they want their life to be. Because again, in a franchise, you're able to reach out and talk to existing franchise owners. And if you're educated enough or clear on what your own vision is, and you understand what that business is about, then you can start to see, is there a match between your goals and what people are actually achieving in that business?
And how can a franchisee make sure that the franchisor is going to deliver on the promises in both the short term and then as, you know, the business evolves in the long term?
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, we live in a world today where franchises are regulated by the FTC, and they must provide a disclosure document. And in our state, we are a registration state, so that that document is reviewed, and any claims that the franchisor makes, they are basically saying to the state that we're going to stand behind those. And if they don't, and if there are complaints, they actually can lose the right to market in the state. But at the end of the day, I think that the client needs to talk to people that are in that system. They need to understand what has been the history of that franchise. How do they deal with disputes? How do they grow? How do they change? All my clients, I strongly recommend they go out and sit down with the senior management team of the franchise, talk with them, look people in the eye, and understand what their vision is for the business over time. And I think it's reasonably easy to get 80-90% sure when you do make a decision that this is the right business for yourself.
Is there a resource that they can go to that gives a checklist or something that helps them go through this process?
There are, and certainly good. There's nothing that I can refer you to as a general checklist, but you know, aligning yourself with a good coach who has a history and understands, has relationships with the franchisors, so that they make sure that your client is treated special and is given a complete understanding of the business without sales pressure. That's probably the best thing. And there are checklists in terms of how to read a franchise disclosure document that I can make available to people who are in that process.
That gets us to, how do you choose a great broker?
Am I allowed to give my phone number? I'm only kidding.
We'll get that in at the end.
Yeah, I think what you really need to do is, just like choosing a good accountant or a good attorney, any professional advisor, you should expect to be able to sit down with that person without cost and get an idea as to how they do business, how they approach it, and it's many times a personal decision.
We've been speaking with Jeff Levy of the Entrepreneur Source, and we will bring John Sechrest back into the interview. He's from the Seattle Angel Conference, and you're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. Have questions or comments? Call us at 866-712-1300. Our show today is all about business startups. I'm here with my guest, John Sechrest of the Seattle Angel Conference, and Jeff Levy of the Entrepreneur Source. If you have questions, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. So, John, what types of people make great entrepreneurs?
So the biggest thing that happens with entrepreneurs is that they actually have to commit to a vision. Somewhere out there, there's some idea that's really important, and they commit to that and leap. And people who are not willing to make that kind of commitment, you know, sort of like going over the bridge halfway and then jumping in the river, you get all wet. So you have to find people who are, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're willing to focus and work really hard as a result of that, stay on task of trying to find what the end result is without holding on specifically to the details of what it is, because things will change for sure as you go through the process.
What I find in my own pursuit of entrepreneurship is I have so many ideas, I don't know which one to pursue.
Yeah, pick one.
And you got to pick one.
Yeah, so that's often true. Entrepreneurs are typically 1,000 ideas a day kind of people. But the key, you know, especially to lean startups, is to build those little experiments where you can test whether or not that's a useful idea. And if you can make it into a business, then go for it. And if it's not the best idea, then sell it to someone else and go for the next one.
I think that's easier to do, let's say, if you're building an app and you're a coder. You could throw something up on the web and have people play with it and so forth. But is that really always true, Jeff, for other types of businesses, do you think?
Well, I think what an entrepreneur needs to do, candidly, is look at their dreams and then look at their fears and put them on a scale. And when their dreams are a little heavier, I think that's one of the things that makes someone have greater potential for being an entrepreneur. And I've also observed that people with big egos are not the best entrepreneurs. They tend to be a little bit more bullying. So I think people that consider themselves lifetime learners, that look at the world as opportunity versus scarcity, are really important qualities. But you can be an entrepreneur. I think you can make anything into an entrepreneurial venture as long as you understand there's a relationship between risk and reward. And a definition of an entrepreneur is someone that assumes the risk and reward in order to make a business venture, a for-profit business venture.
So have you seen a lot of businesses that keep it going even if they're not really getting that big reward?
Yes. Well, I think there is a time when one should put a business to rest. And so you need to have a mental toughness. You need to have good advisors. And, you know, I think a business, and I love the entrepreneurial spirit. That's what I love being around. But there's a point that if you're not getting an adequate return on the investment, if the business isn't meeting its goals, you need to really be thoughtful about that and perhaps make adjustments or move on to something else.
John, you have a comment about that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. There's, you know, yes is a good answer and no is a good answer. And maybe in the middle is a really bad answer for entrepreneurs. And so running those experiments that allow you to know whether or not you're going to make a return is really useful. And so getting back to your idea of software is easy to test, but other things aren't, I would argue that that's not true. Any business can go talk to customers, find out what it is that they care about, and build to that need. And now that we've got 3D printing and we've got all this infrastructure built in the world, it's really rapid to turn around even hardware products for people. So if you needed a new microphone stand, we could have a conversation, and in 6 weeks I could have you a new one. And if I could find a way to do that profitably, that could be a really interesting thing. The only way that I'm going to know that is talking with customers.
And it seems to me that's what we from the marketing world would call a lot of market research before you sign on the dotted line or pay out anything. I had a client come into SCORE once, and she wanted to start kind of a training camp for people to learn how to play baseball, and she wanted to get a facility and the whole thing. And one thing I advised her to do was, hey, go to Meetup, which is the online source where you can schedule meetings with various people, and the tool's already there for you, software's already there, and see if she could hold a weekend baseball boot camp without a facility that she would have to pay for. And she thought that was a great idea. It would be a great way to test interest in her idea before she went forward. So I agree. Doing that testing makes a whole lot of sense. So what is it about the Seattle business climate that makes it good for entrepreneurs? Or what is lacking as well?
So the Seattle startup scene is very active, much more active than most of the other places I've been. The SeattleTechCalendar.com is a website you can go and find all of the different events. There's like 5 or 6 events a day, every day of the week, all month long that you can do something with. Perhaps there's a little bit heavy on the software programming and drinking beer side.
There is a bit of that.
There is a bit of that. You know, that beer and coding.
Nothing
is
wrong with beer, getting the ideas flowing. About the execution, though, I think that's a different
issue.
Yeah,
but there is a group called Beer and Code that actually get together once a week and code and drink beer. So for me, I'm still working on that one. But in any case, there's lots of things that you can find to do. But there's not so much stuff in the middle where you get people who have experience and resources to put them on the table at the same time. So Founders Institute is an example of something very interesting that's in the ecosystem, where you actually spend some time working really hard on building the skills. I see the Angel Conference that I'm working on is trying to do that same thing for angel development, and that's why I'm working on this. Something I saw earlier today was the Northwest Entrepreneur Foundation for the Northwest in Portland, where they have startup companies put some of their shares of stock so that when they succeed, that money goes back into the ecosystem to support entrepreneurs. So that kind of thing, where we have recycling of skills and money into the ecosystem in a more organized way, I don't see in Seattle right now.
Robert, if I can add,
you
talked about the Seattle community, and I think there's always a difference between perception and reality from an economic situation. And as I've, because I coach a lot of people that are in career transition thinking about self-employment, I've actually looked at the statistics about unemployment based on income levels. And even through the worst of this sort of deep recession we've had in 2008, 2011, people in the higher income levels were still employed, still being productive. So this is a great economy, and people like living here.
And it's growing.
Right. And we have examples, of course, with great companies like Microsoft and Amazon that have started. Well, I know, we can shake our heads there. In terms of the entrepreneurial side, in terms of what they were when they started, and I think that gets people excited about being part of that kind of excitement and growth.
Because they can see the opportunity.
Yeah.
They can see where it could go.
Yeah, but absolutely.
So Amazon and Google are being very successful and attracting a lot of very interesting people to the area.
I think Twitter just moved here,
Just moved here. Facebook, Adobe.
Not moved, but opened an office. There's a
serious number of very interesting people here, so much so that it's somewhat hard to find co-founders, technical co-founders for startups, because they have a lot of demand. There's a great big sucking sound going towards Amazon.
But I see a lot of people when I'm consulting and counseling that they can't wait to make the leap from the big boys, because they're not really doing what they're able, that, you know, they're not able to do that startup innovative thing that they really want to do on their own. So there is a bit of that as well.
It's a dilemma, and that's where we get a lot of people coming into the startup, our lean startup program, is there's people trying to explore this question of how do I do that well without falling on my face. And so I think that the great big energy that's going into these big companies now will turn into a significant opportunity in the near term, as some of the people decide that that's not what they want to do, but they're here in Seattle and they see the opportunity and they're going to start more new businesses.
And they cycle out and that kind of thing.
Right.
My guests are Jeff Levy and John Secrest. We've been speaking about starting businesses, whether that's a franchise or a tech startup or whatever. If you have any questions for us, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media, and we will discuss your comments and questions on the air. So what is the real difference between, let's say, the mind? I'm really interested in this mind of the entrepreneur thing.
Sure.
I've seen a lot of differences myself between that tech geek startup person that might have come out of Microsoft or Amazon, and let's say someone who is coming out of the corporate environment and starting a new career and that kind of thing. And I know they have a desire to work for themselves and they want to create their own universe. How do they behave differently when they are actually in the process of starting a business? Like the tech startup, I mean, I've tried to work with some tech startups and maybe that's a little difficult at times. I'd like to get at that idea.
So many of the people who are startup people who are trying it for the first time, coming from big businesses or coming from other places that are operating at a different pace, don't really have that core sense of urgency that's really important for an entrepreneur. They take months to do things that we hope that they would be doing in days. And so there's a certain amount of getting out there and talking to people for real, like right now kind of thing, rather than I think I'll talk to people in a couple of months after I figure out the answer. That urgency and that expectation that other people will pick things up for you that comes with being in a large organization are things that aren't going to happen in your small business with one or two people.
You think that's true, Jeff, too?
I do. I think that maybe a little bit of a generalization, because there are people that sometimes get frustrated within a corporate environment because things don't move so fast and they don't like the politics, and those are good candidates for the self-employment. But I think what entrepreneurs need to understand is that this isn't just about the greatest idea. You can have the greatest idea and not have a successful business. It's really about a systematic, thoughtful approach where you start with assumptions and you start with a business plan. When I coach entrepreneurs, I always say, look, even though this might not be the most comfortable stuff, start with the financial stuff. You know, what are your assumptions for revenue? What are your assumptions for margin? What are your assumptions for cost?
Mm-hmm. Where do you want to end up, in other words?
Yeah. And then build, you know, if it doesn't make sense on paper as a financial approach to a business, then it may be a hobby and maybe a mistake.
Yeah. If you're not making money, it's a hobby, right? And that's what we say at SCORE all the time. Also, it seems to me that it's very important to bring the people who have kind of the business head and like the operational side of a business, and they just want to be able to service customers and all that, and bring them together with the people who can do the tech innovation part of it or the engineering side of things. How do you make those two sides? They're very different minds. Yeah. How do you make them come together?
Well, I've spent the last 9 years in the franchise side, and one of the things that I've observed is that it's really a unique person that comes up with that curing of cancer idea.
But that's even almost too big. What about came up with Twitter? You know what I mean?
Right. But I guess the
is
point...
Is that a curing for cancer idea? I don't think so.
Maybe someday. You never know.
Yeah.
But I guess the point that I wanted to make is that sometimes when we talk about getting a project off the ground, the reason I like franchises is because it creates that system. And if the person has drive, they have motivation, they've got some fundamental skills, they can get those skills made stronger by the system that they may go into.
And John, do you have a comment?
Yeah, so there's a distinct difference between people who are creating something from new where they don't know who their customer is and they don't know what their product is. And that's dramatically different than like a franchise where you actually know what your typical customer will look like or what the business system looks like. That's what they're selling you. Two totally different experiences.
Jeff Levy and John Sucrest have been sharing their experience about startups here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. If you have ideas or comments, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We'll discuss them on the air, and we'll be back after this. We're here with Jeff Levy and John Sucrest talking about starting up a business. Before the break, we were talking about the minds of tech people starting businesses versus maybe somebody starting a franchise or a regular kind of business. How do we get people who do tech apps, who have a tech mind, who are engineering minded, to really be open to the idea that there are business ideas and business help and business systems in place that they need to understand and work with? So, John, you had some comments about that.
Yeah, so I'm a global facilitator for Startup Weekend. We do from idea to revenue in 54 hours in the weekend. And a lot of that hard work is trying to drive the people who are technically oriented to understand that there's some market research that you need to be doing. There's this other group called Lean Startup Machine that goes around and does customer development weekends. We have one coming up in Seattle on June 29th, where you'll actually spend the weekend trying to do that market research, try and find a market segment, try and do the business model generation, try to do the pivot to align your idea with the people that will actually pay you. So in any business, especially businesses where angel investors are likely to come into, they're looking for a team. And there's four things that really have to happen, 3M plus T. You got to have some kind of technology. You got to have some kind of market. You have to understand your money, and you have to have management.
So that's 3M plus T, you say.
Yeah, 3M
I like
plus
that.
T.
Good way to remember it.
And so with those, you know, you can do about one and a half of those well. So two people can do two of them well and two of them not so well, but they can do all four. But if you don't have all four of those things figured out in your business model, you can't carry the business forward. And so you really have to have a partner. And one of those partners has to be willing to play with the money. And one of them has to be willing to talk to customers and to understand the market segmentation. And there are programs around that do that, like Lean Startup Machine. Startup Weekend, the next one of those is July 18th. It's focused on women, seattlewomen.startupweekend.org. And it's an experience to go sort of do some dating with some people to find out whether or not you like them in your team or not, to play a new role and experiment whether you can do market research even though you're a coder, or whether you want to do graphic design instead of market research. All of those things are possible. But learning how to get all four of those skill sets into the company is really core to having a team that's going to be successful.
And anybody can go to these?
Yeah, it's open to anybody. We've had we had a nine-year-old come and pitch at one recently. So
how did they do?
They did fine. They were exceptional. They have wash-off stickers. It was hilarious. The guy did a great job. He may be younger than nine.
We used to have these wash-off tattoos.
They were
called cockamamies back in the day.
There you go.
I've been wanting to say that on the air for so long.
Cockamamies. In any case, we've seen people that were 75, 80 who were there. We've seen people. There was a woman that came out of the Thai mentorship program who was a high school student, did fabulous work on a team. People who are willing to engage and sort of suspend their disbelief that it's not possible to create a business in a weekend really can do some fabulous things.
Speaking of business models, where does social media fit in the business model now? It's such a huge part of the conversation going on, but where does it fit in actually creating the business?
So it feels to me like you're asking the question, what is it like to have air to breathe? Social media is like fundamental to any business development. It's something that should just be done. If you do a cash flow analysis for your business because you got to understand your cash, you're doing social media because you got to understand your customer. And if you're not in dialogue with your customer, then you got a big problem. And I can visit four or five people a day, or I can call on the phone 15 to 20 people a day, but I can talk to thousands of people in a day on social media.
But that's the marketing side of the equation, or the promotional side of the equation. I'm talking about how important is it to build social tools, for example, into applications?
Oh, I think that all of the applications should have some connection to social media because that's how the application actually engages with the customer base. So building social apps is really fundamental, and building non-social apps, say it another way, every app should be social, regardless of whether it's focused on libraries or McDonald's or whatever kind of app you're building. It needs to integrate with social media as a fundamental.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I just think the social media, too, if it's used correctly, opens up a two-way dialogue. I think we tend to talk about it in terms of something that is always outbound marketing, outbound brand development.
Well, there is the customer support piece. We saw Zappos use that pretty successfully.
Absolutely. But a way of contacting and creating dialogues. In fact, I understand that the two of you guys met through Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did?
Yeah, so I found you and started following you on Twitter, and I sent you a note.
That had to be 4 years ago.
That was like 4 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
It's still valid information, Robin.
Yep. But how did we meet, Jeff?
We met at a book conference.
Yes, so that was live.
It was live, but my next step would have been to tweet you, I'm sure.
And connect on LinkedIn and all that. But, I think the point I would like to make here is that there are so many people out there saying social media is replacing everything. It's the new way to communicate and all that. But obviously, it doesn't replace. It enhances. I mean, I think that's really the approach.
Absolutely. Well, I'll give you an example I talk about. I published a book this summer, and I do a lot of speaking relating to it. But it's just so interesting. Using social media, finding bloggers on the topic just creates a much, much dynamic way of getting the word out as to what the product is. Now, the book is only one example. So I've become a huge fan of social media, but I'm also very concerned from the thing I like about it is a very low-cost way of reaching a lot of people. If I was spending
out-of-pocket cost.
Well,
time is a cost.
Right. Time is the most valuable asset that we have. But if I was trying to justify a marketing budget, which I have done in prior careers, I think I'd have a really hard time justifying a big budget on social media because it's difficult to really understand
the return. ROI.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
actually, my experience has been that you can do a really effective job of ROI on social media where you can actually put the metrics in place and track it. So, I'm doing a conference, I start doing some social media, do my Twitter thing, do my blog thing, and I start watching the little knob change on my tickets that are being sold. So I can actually instrument that in a much more effective way than I can in a piece of paper ad. And so I think that Jeff had a very important point that I don't want to get lost in this conversation. Inbound marketing is really fundamental to being successful with a business, which is to create that two-way dialogue with customers and to engage with them as people. And social media lets you do that in a way that no other media lets you do that. So it's fundamental for me. Even though everybody has the hype curve going for it, it's still fundamental.
Agreed. I think it is overhyped to a degree, but it's still valuable. It's just I think people have a hard time with all the hype determining how much it's valuable, how much they should allocate, what they really need to do. And it takes so much time away from doing so many other things they could be doing.
Well, and there's a lot of people who are not very good at using this tool yet. And so there's a certain amount of getting good at the tool that is the thing that are thrown up as the examples of why you shouldn't use social media. I can prove all sorts of bad writing in all sorts of different media, but when you use it well, it can be extraordinarily powerful.
And measurable.
And measurable. And in my mind, that's where customer development is going to be very early in the business cycle, before doing social media before product development.
We'll have to continue this conversation another time because we're out of time. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank my guest, Jeff Levy of The Entrepreneur Source. For more information about him and his book, visit thesource.com/jlevy. And thanks to John Sechrist of the Seattle Angel Conference at seattleangelconference.com. Opening music credits for New Dork go to Paintless Nights. From Money Radio KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, reality radio for entrepreneurs. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
Minding Your Business with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's robin@blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.